Okay, I had a couple ideas for what?
Is that all your notes for this movie?
No.
Oh my god.
This is the last.
I was like, holy shit. The line, I think that's more than what denotes. Was in the script.
You didn't pick up on the subtext? There was so much of.
There have been some movies where I take quite a bit of notes, but no, that's Deadfall right there.
Okay. Because that one page alone looks bigger than the whole script of the movie.
So. Yeah. There's more thought put into that than the rest of the movie.
I had a couple options for Cold Open. We could either do the Wendy's Gen Con follow-up or whatever, or Who Killed Captain Alex, too.
As the cold open?
Yeah.
Let's do Gen Con update. See how the screening went and how that went. Yeah.
Sure.
As a resident person who was at Gen Con.
Yeah. So, yeah, we just got back sort of from, we're back after, the from the Vault episodes would have been before, but it's been a few weeks since we've recorded.
Yeah.
Cause I was at Gen Con. Wendy's had a screening there at the film festival. It went really well. It was really cool.
First son of Baconator.
Huh?
For Son of Baconator. Yeah. I will say I really like the title of the short film. It sucks to search for on YouTube because it auto-corrects to Wendy's. And you have to click, no, I meant to search for Wendies. You have to tell it.
Yeah, no, like, at least as far as our shorts that I've been to screenings for, never seen such a solid, like, laughing at like every single joke pretty much. There was like the nice. Only jokes that were missed were the ones that they couldn't hear because they were like laughing at the previous ones or whatever, but like I've never seen such a hit rate for our like own videos. It was really awesome.
Nice.
That's good.
Also, this is only like tangentially related, but right the same day of the screening, we had another event. I guess as a brief, Gen Con is like the world's largest, or well, at least the Western Hemisphere's largest gaming convention. It's in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like gaming events, but there is also a film festival. So anyways, before we went to the screening, we had an event for, it was Nerd Fandom Trivia Night. okay. It was just like pub trivia, pretty much, just like kind of centered around fandom shit. And they did the team names. People, you know, it, like pub trivia, you just like make up like a fun name. We did Wendy's, but we did it Wendeez to make it more obvious. And like literally we were like, they did like the first few names and people, you know, there was like chuckles. It got to us. I shit you not. Like people applauded for our name. Like the whole room like erupted into applause for Wendy's.
That's so good.
But yeah, screening was dope. We got to do a little Q&A afterwards, which was nice. And yeah, we broke 200 views on YouTube.
I was going to say.
Hell yeah.
And also a few people I noticed commented on it that specifically said, hey, we're from Gen Con. Like, we wanted to tell you that this video was great. Like, people sought it out, which is...
So it's not just us saying it on the show.
Yeah.
Other people have enjoyed it. Go watch it.
Yeah. Literally tens of people.
Yeah. There was not 100, but there was a good amount of people there.
No, that's a pretty solid turnout.
Yeah.
When there's thousands of other events going on simultaneously.
True. That is true. Right. Yeah. How much shit's going on at Gen Con all the time. Right. And that was during the Gen Con dance, which is like a huge event.
Holy shit.
That's when it screened us during the dance.
You got screwed for your time slot.
Yeah. Did you say the Gen Con dance?
Yeah.
It's like an adult mixer.
It's
like a
dance.
Middle school dance.
Oh, okay.
But for adults.
With alcohol.
Yeah. Alcohol, okay.
Yeah. It's cool. It's like, there's only
chaperones there.
Yeah. Yeah.
There probably should be.
It is very middle
school. Instead of leave room for Jesus, it's leave room for Gary Gygax.
Welcome back to episode 61 of There Will Be Duds. I'm your co-host, TJ, aka J Spot Jack Cheese, and with me, as always,
I'm Nick, aka Dr. Funk on Twitch, and with us, as always,
I'm Connor. I'm something on Twitter. I'm there somewhere.
You don't know your.
I'm Bingo Bronson 420 on Twitter. Yeah, and that's about it.
One of your egregious several Philbin. Alts.
Oh yeah, one of my two dozen.
You used to harass people.
Yeah, got a whole gang of them.
And as always, we watched a movie just now, pretty much.
Yeah, did we all watch it today?
I just finished it moments before we started setting up to record. We were supposed to watch 2012, right?
Yeah. That movie being Deadfall from 1993, directed by Christopher Coppola. It follows a guy named Joe, I think, played by Michael Biehn. He's a con artist. He kills his dad at the beginning of the movie in the middle of a con on accident. And then he's kind of roped into, because of that, he's brought into his uncle's, his dad's twin brother's separate con world. And they're going to pull off a really big con of their own, I guess. But really, this is Nicolas Cage's movie. So
yeah,
he's also there as like a guy who's just there.
It's I think straightforward as it sounds.
I think because he is related to the director, I don't know why else he's in this movie.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much Deadfall.
All right. Good talk.
Yeah. The first thing that I really noticed about this, this movie, or maybe let's go back. I feel like this movie set the Grandpa Crane blueprint in some ways in terms of like utilizing certain movie tropes.
Okay.
Like watching it, I was like, this is something that like we would do sort of like as amateurs, like the whole, like the briefcase.
I kind of get what you mean. I get, yeah.
Like there's like the sequence with like the briefcase. And like there's the part where after like he's killed his dad, he's like sitting there with like the handle of whiskey, that's like a very Grandpa Crane / like Andyism. I feel like there's been a number of shorts that I've done with Andy where like I'm holding a bottle of some sort of brown liquid.
Right.
I noticed all these like kind of noir crime drama like tropes in this movie, that it's like you can tell the guy who wrote it. This sounds so much weirder without my headphones on now. It reminded me of like another Nicolas Cage movie adaptation, where Nicolas Cage plays Charlie Kaufman and also his brother Donald. What's up?
I wanted to see how you finished that one out.
Oh, in the movie adaptation, Charlie Kaufman, who's like a real person, is played by Nicolas Cage. He's also played by his twin brother. He doesn't have a twin brother in real life, but the character, Donald Kaufman, like writes this script that is full of like, but what if the serial killer's the same person and he's actually chasing himself? And it just like leans into every single trope of the genre. I feel like this movie leans into every single trope of like, and I'm just seeing this Christopher Coppola as like the Coppola brother who's like, I could be a screenwriter too. I can write and direct a movie. And it's just
this is his godfather for sure.
He's like, oh, Francis, forget about that guy. I can write one too.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because one of my notes here says it feels like it was written by a middle schooler.
yeah, exactly.
How hard they hit the every single trope. And I don't just mean tropes in the like screenwriting. The like intro voiceover use like every trope and idiom and like turn of phrase like in the book.
It's like, ever since I was a young kid, I wanted to be a good fella whatever like that sort of monologue is from Goodfellas. It's
wait,
like,
do you actually think he says Goodfellas?
No, I know he doesn't. Okay. What does he say?
Like, wise guy,
a gangster. Wise guy, a gangster. Yeah,
it's gangster.
It is gangster.
No, that's what Martin Scorsese's cousin Eric Scorsese. Yeah. I always wanted to be a good fella.
I always wanted to be a Deadfall. That is a really like interesting way to put it, that it is very Grandpa Craney. That's like weirdly accurate, even though I like hadn't thought about that at all watching it. But I think also in a way it may have influenced Grandpa, at least in my part, Grandpa Crane isms as far as like performances, because watching this, and I will say this is exclusive to Nick Cage's role. This is one of those where like, because I watched this movie originally back in like 2009, 2010, so like right before we started like doing like the big block of Grandpa Crane shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched it like a handful of times, and like that was it. But I watched it maybe like three or four times within the span of like, I don't know, a few months with groups of people. And I like watching this unlocked like how many like things Nicolas Cage does in this that I did for like years afterwards. Like so much. Like the, you know, from the "Be You Not Fucking Friends," man.
Yep, yep.
Or like the when he's like, one that really hit was where he's like on the bed and he's going like, ah,
yeah,
and then he rolls over and he just goes. I'm pretty sure, like for instance, in Francois 3, spoilers, the end of it where Stark dies.
Uh-huh.
That's what I based Francois's crying off of. Was that like,
oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah, there was so much stuff like this. I was like, that's from this movie too?
Yeah, yeah.
That's also from this, that line or whatever.
You wanna fucking kill me, man? What am I fucking Rico, man? Oh, I connected it to another Grandpa Crane short. I connected it to As Is as well. Mm. When his dad dies at the beginning, and he's like laying on the ground when they're, because like it starts out with them like pulling a heist or something, and they're basically all
a
in
sting.
Yeah, and they're all in on this, and they're all basically like pretending to be feds and like this to scare this guy off, basically. And so their guns are allegedly full of blanks, but mm-hmm. then they shoot. He thinks that he actually shot his dad. But when his dad like rolls over to like talk to his son, presumably for the last time, he does like the final words from the beginning of As Is. I feel like the first time you die, because he's like, the part where you're like, wait, I don't want to go out like that. And then it rewinds.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he sounded like when he was dying. Oh, he was doing, funny. He's like trying to talk to him and he's like, and then he just dies.
Which in a way, that's like, it's one of the more like realistic aspects of the movie that like, you're not always going to get like last words.
Yeah.
Like that. I think that's in that first scene too, where the guy's like, I want a taste of like the cocaine, and then he's like,
and then it hits him immediately.
Yeah, he's like, I'm seeing daisies, baby, or something, some shit like that.
Yeah,
some, I don't know,
like Zach getting high in The Ungrateful Dead, where yeah, I'm just stoned immediately, and I'm just,
yeah. I think the only thing that we don't really have in any of the Grandpa Cranes, I mean, sans the Lynch movies, if you want to count those, yeah, is like narration. Like, I wonder like how much more similarities there would be between them if we did.
The word you're looking for is Copeland.
Copeland.
So what accent do you think Nicolas Cage is doing in this?
Yes.
Yeah. There are several characters in this that I feel like they're just, their accent or like their notes were just like, slur your words.
Yeah.
Italian?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good default.
That doesn't even sound right, but like, I feel like they play that up with him in this. I wrote down that he like, it's something that like, if he didn't do this, his performance wouldn't be like as magnetic as it is the whole time. But there's like this weird thing that he does with his face where he like, it's like he puffs his face up. It's really weird. Like he's always like he's bloated
and like,
he's really like straining on it, just against nothing, just straining, straining himself.
Yeah. And he's always like looks sweaty and greasy and that super shitty wig that he wears. and then I theorize after his demise, I was like, maybe that's foreshadowing because like he ends up bloated and greasy, like dead on the floor.
Literally in grease.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, because a week ago we went, or I guess 2 weeks now, we went to go see Wild at Heart, which I think this is what, 93?
This is. Yeah,
I think Wild at Heart is like 91 or 92, which it's kind of funny that you say he's like bloated and greasy because in Wild at Heart, he's like constantly being this Elvis-like figure, like singing Elvis songs. Like at the end of that movie, he sings like Love Me Tender. And it's very similar. He kind of has that, because I think if you want to get that Elvis voice, you kind of have to strain a little bit. So maybe that was just like a thing he was going through at the time.
Maybe.
I could see Nicolas Cage being an Elvis guy.
Yeah.
And being like, I'm just, this is my Elvis period.
Yeah. it's so funny too, because like, he doesn't show up until like roughly like 20 minutes in. And like everything around him makes this feel like a bland but like normal movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're all like, okay, yeah, it's like a crime movie. Okay, these are the,
everyone's playing it pretty straight.
Yeah. And then you get to him and you just hear like the shuffling of cards behind Michael Biehn, and then the pick a card.
Yeah, as soon as you meet him, like he takes your attention.
That's when the movie really starts.
And honestly,
it is like, that is the chunk of that's like roughly 20 minutes into roughly an hour, and that's the good part of the movie, because it's the Cage stuff, and it focuses so much on him, and it is like 40 minutes of a movie that's like a little over like an hour and a half, so almost half of the movie is like really heavily focused on this one character who doesn't really matter, like at all. Especially when you realize that like the only thing that he could be there for sort of is Diane, like bringing her into it, bringing the love interest into it, even though that is like a very weak reason to focus on this person for almost half your movie. But then it turns out that she was set up, or she was brought in there by Joe's dad anyways. So it's like, even if Nicolas Cage's character wasn't there, she would have been there because she was part of the con.
Yeah, that's,
so he literally has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, it's one of those movies again, like I said with like all the tropes, this, you guys did that synchronized, it was perfect. You guys did four chicks. that sounded like, it was like, this would be so cool if Diane was like in on it the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like that recontextualizes the relationship with Eddie, and like it kind of falls apart under its own weight.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the writer was probably thinking, this would be so cool if we did this. Oh, yeah. Diane was in on it the whole time. His dad did it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many things that like I'm like, oh man, that guy thinks that's so cool.
Yeah,
but then you get to the Nicolas Cage part, you bring it back to that, and you're like, how does he think that this is cool? Like Nicolas Cage
he's right. It is cool.
It is cool. Like when he walks in the apartment room and he just does
trying to kill me.
Yeah,
he's like trying to go Super Saiyan.
Yeah,
his performance like absolutely carries this movie. Like, I think given enough time, I'd be hard pressed to name another person who was even in it. I don't know. He just absolutely carries this.
Charlie Sheen.
I mean, I just watched it, so I know, but a couple months or whatever.
I was so checked out during that. Am I stupid? Or did I miss a line of dialogue that explains what pool game that they're playing? Because it looked like he was just hitting it.
Yeah, there were no pockets in that table. Did you notice that?
No.
Also, they were all solid colors and there were no numbers on them.
Well, I think in like old school billiards, it would be like yellow and red and then maybe the eight ball.
Yeah.
So that's like that functions as like stripes and solids.
Oh, okay.
But
gotcha.
I guess, I didn't notice that there were no pockets. Is this snooker, which I think is like a European game?
It might have been. I don't know.
Because Charlie Sheen was like talking about how good he is at this game. And he was just like,
I just made up.
Yeah. And like, I'm watching it because they never actually show like the full pool table. Mm. They'll show like him hit it and it'll like kind of bounce off a few of the banks.
Yeah.
And then it'll kind of like tilt up away from like, it'll go back to him. And I'm like, what game is he playing?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I was getting mad. I was like, I don't know what's going on. He's just hitting balls.
I was just going to say that scene just in general, like I didn't realize that until it was almost over. But yeah, I was like, there's no pockets on that pool table. But also
it's
like
a Corsair.
Also, I was like, what the fuck is the point of this scene? Like it went on for so fucking long and they would hit the ball. It would hit the other balls and then it would pan up and Charlie Sheen would be like, nice.
Yeah, that was so cool.
Yeah,
it was another one where it's like a microcosm of Nicolas Cage, where it's like, yeah, he's totally pointless and he only exists for to move him to the neck to the dude with the Edward Scissorhand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, it was like probably the second biggest star in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, depending on maybe like at the time, but like James Coburn is like who played the uncle / the dad. He was pretty big. He was in like a bunch of like Westerns, like Magnificent Seven and shit.
Yeah.
He was Flint.
Monsters, Inc.
is where I knew him from.
Oh, yeah. Is he Mr. Waternoose?
Yeah, he is.
Oh, shit. Okay.
He's got that.
I recognize the voice and I think about it. Yeah.
I'll let 100 children die before I let that happen or whatever. Yeah. That, you know.
I'll kidnap 1,000 children before I let this company die.
That's it.
Let this company die.
Yeah, I thought we were doing a movie on Monster or an episode on Monsters Inc. So I watched that instead.
God, like I just remembered another like. I guess it's just like coming back to me like another thing that there's just so much shit that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like in this movie, like there's the thing with the coffee stand girl.
Oh yeah.
There's like two scenes with her, and like the last scene you see is like the one guy's he walks by and she's like, oh, you want a coffee or donut on the house? And he's like, no, I'm good. Maybe next time. And then he like goes to the other guy and he's like, hey, Joe. And he's like, hey, what's up with her? And he's like, what's her story? And he's like, oh, she likes you. And he's like, oh, okay. And then he's like, stay away from her. I like her. And then he's like, okay. And then the scene ends. And there's nothing else. Like,
it's in the director's cut, but it does explain that.
Oh, okay.
I'm
there's
so
another like 5 minute sex scene.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah. Yeah, I was surprised that they even revisited her because like the first instance of her like being like, oh, I've never seen what did she did the thing. She did the reverse thing where usually like the guys like you come here often, but like she said it to him.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I've never been here before. And she's like, haha. Yeah, I know.
That's just another instance of the brilliance of this movie.
Yeah. And then there's like that. She kind of like gives him that look, like offers him the free like pastry. And it's like, okay, she digs this guy. But then, yeah, she like, it's not brought up again. So I was like, okay, there's probably some subplot that gets cut, whatever. Had Heat come out at this time?
No.
Okay.
Nope. That was 95. This was a couple years before.
Because like, that seemed like a very Heat type interaction. Mm. But I was like, okay, there's probably something more to that. And it just got cut for time. But then, like, they revisited it, like you said, and it was still just as inconsequential. Yeah. So it's like, why even bother revisiting it in the first place? Because it doesn't...
The only thing it does is to, like, show, oh, our main character, he's hot.
Yeah.
Or, like, I guess.
Baristas want him.
Yeah. And speaking of that first time, the first scene with her, that's probably why she was, like, onto him is because he looked just like Rowdy Roddy Piper and they live.
Yes, I had that same thought with the sunglasses on.
And like, yeah, that the like the
like denim shirt.
Yeah, the shirt, or I can't think of like what.
Oh god, I just hear John Carpenter's like boat as he's like walking around.
Yeah. Yeah, except this is like YouTube music library version of that. Cuz oh man, like sometimes it was like appropriate, but like it was never like great. It was like at best like standard.
Yeah.
But there was some that just felt so fucking out of place where he's like, I think there's one where he's like casing a spot or something like that. He's just kind of like walking around like checking people out, and it's going like boop 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 boop.
Yeah,
very
like now this YouTube video.
yeah
that was made by Ron Williams, the John Williams' cousin.
Yeah,
yeah, this is a very cousins movie. Like, yeah. This is like the type of movie you'd go over to like a family event, and your cousins would be like, "You want to watch Deadfall?"
Yeah,
made for cousins by cousins. So that's probably the worst. Also, okay, speaking of inconsequential characters, fake beard guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh my god.
No, yeah, I want, okay. Yes.
The fakest, like, most middle school play beard I've ever seen.
It's like Alan Rickman's beard in, like, Die Hard.
It was bad enough that I wrote a note, and I have, like, I have no notes on this movie.
But it's like a painting. Your eyes are immediately drawn to
Sam fucking Peckinpah.
More drinks? Yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah. If you want to grab me a pumpkin as well. Okay. It's actually, it's pretty... Yeah, it's actually pretty good. I'm kind of picky about pumpkin beers because there's just so many of them.
I'm sorry.
But this one's actually, I'm a fan. I think it's actually made with real pumpkin puree.
Ooh.
Fake beard.
Yeah.
Yes. What I was going to say is that it's so fucking great that they do it fucking twice in this movie. Like it's supposed to be a plot twist or something. Nicolas Cage is fighting this dude with the fake beard, and he slowly pulls it off to show that he has a fake beard. And then later,
it's just some guy.
And then, like 10 minutes later, Michael Biehn is fighting Nicolas Cage and slowly pulls his fake ass wig off.
Like, he's like, it's like what's it's poetry? It rhymes.
Yeah. I'm like, what? Why? Give them these terrible like dues? I don't get it.
And it's like when Joe initially like leaves too. They make a point to like highlight this dude with the fake beard like sitting behind him on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Like okay, there's so many like setups that do not get paid off.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, this guy's following him. We never find out why he's following him.
Why
he's associated with?
Yeah, why does he want to kill Nicolas Cage?
Yeah,
and like why was he following Joe if he ended up trying to kill Nicolas Cage? I don't know.
Baffling choice. So many baffling decisions.
But another, I also wanted to talk a bit about the beard guy, because that's another, like, I guess, like, Grandpa Craneism sort of thing. or just, like, cool, like, film student thing, where it's like, oh, I'm going to have, like, a character trait. They think that just, like, giving somebody a character trait, like, means that there's like depth or meaning,
like
behind
significance.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like you see, and you only see it immediately before he dies when he's in the bar and Nicolas Cage has his big freak out.
Right.
He's like, oh, and he's like sitting there at the bar and he's like listening to Nicolas Cage leave. And then he pulls a pack of Good and Plenty out of his shirt pocket and like eats them, and it's like, that's what I mean, like it's like, oh, I'm trying to think of like something like similar, but there's like, you know, I feel like there's like plenty of movies where there's like, oh, this guy's like a psychopath, but he really likes lollipops. He's always has like a lollipop in his mouth when he's killing people. So that's this guy's thing. He eats Good and Plenties, and then when
like,
he dies,
Willem Dafoe's Classical Music and Boondock Saints.
A little character quirk. That's a better way to put it. Yeah. A quirk. And like that was his, is like he eats Good and Plenty even though it's just the one time, and then he dies, and then you see like the Good and Plenties kind of like spill over him as he dies, and it's like, okay, but why? why'd you include that?
Killer product placement from Good and Plenty.
Yeah. Maybe that was it. Yeah.
Movie's got to get sponsored.
This is
somehow
such a good and plenty ass movie.
Well, no, that's perfect because the one time I bought Good and Plenty's, I thought that they were going to be like Mike and Ike's, and I learned a very valuable lesson.
Yeah,
I don't dislike
Mike and Ike's.
I don't dislike black licorice, but when
you're expecting Mike and Ike's,
I was like, oh, still eat the whole box. I'm not going to let it go to waste. You know?
Still hit though.
Still hit. Smashed.
I discovered while I was watching this in the YouTube description, because as I told you guys, I split my
viewing
between Plex and YouTube, that there is a prequel / sequel that came out in 2017.
By the same name?
No, it's called Arsenal. The lead is Adrian Grenier, the guy from Entourage.
Okay.
But it's only, from what I understand, I watched a trailer and kind of like skimmed the Wikipedia. It's only a prequel sequel to this because Nicolas Cage is in it playing Eddie.
Oh.
And like he has so the mustache.
It's in, like, it's
and
in
he
the
has
same the... universe. It's not really a
but
prequel
right,
or
because
sequel.
He fucking died at the end of like he got his face melted off.
But he's like 30 years older than like his character.
It can't be a prequel and it can't be a sequel, but yeah, he's like he's now like a mob boss or something like that, and he's like the bad guy and yeah.
Oh shit.
So he didn't die.
I guess.
And
he survived.
Wasn't even that badly injured. he's got the same face.
It was actually the fryer grease that he dumped his head into those were blanks. So
it was apple cider.
Wow.
Yeah.
I gotta look up what this looks like.
Yeah, he so
it looks like your basic
he died
like,
in this movie
direct to
and
DVD
then
shit.
He died in this movie and then there were 45 more minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, that's awesome.
Incredible.
That's so good.
Yeah.
We'll insert.
He put looks like he looks like one who what's the Andy Kaufman guy?
That's Tony Clifton.
Tony Clifton, yeah.
That's what he looks like.
He looks like Tony Clifton.
He looks like Great Value Pablo Escobar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. After he dies, there is more movie. I don't know. That Charlie Sheen thing is the only thing that stands out because of just how, like, why.
His weird little silver nail that they never pay off.
Yeah. Again,
silver nail?
He had, like, a long, like, a Coke nail.
Yeah.
And Charlie Sheen did?
Yeah. I feel like they did, like, a highlight of it. Like, they zoomed in.
He was wearing, like, these weird fucking two-in-the-paint gloves.
Yeah.
And then he had one,
first
like, silver...
like, a long pinky nail.
Long nail.
I think I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Like it seems like he'd at least like backhand him and like cut his face with it or something.
Yeah, or like you know he'd like, bump.
It never pays off.
Yeah.
Angus Scrimm also had a few like long fingernails.
Yeah, two of them at least. Yeah, that's another thing is like okay, now we have like a bad guy with fucking scissor hands like a mechanical they just decide to like throw in a few fucking curveballs at the end.
I can't imagine why you would throw in that terrible mechanical arm.
Yeah,
unless you were going to, you know, do something with it.
It's like shake my hand, boy, and then
That's the shit that makes it like even more baffling. It's like it's kind of like the Nicolas Cage thing, but in a different way. It's like for most of this, it's a normal, bland noir crime thing, and then you have Nicolas Cage, you have a guy with a fucking scissor hand. It's just weird to just have these small things peppered in like that.
It's like this was their first time at a film festival, and those were like their requisite things they had to add to
required elements.
You have to have scissor hand.
You have to have a mechanical arm, a weird metal Coke nail, and Nicolas Cage.
it was like at the Frankfurt one where after the thing they were like with that little kid. Remember?
Oh.
They were like, hey, if anybody wants to use Nicolas Cage in their movie, here's his phone number. He wants to act. So
yeah,
call up Nicolas Cage.
Oh my god.
Well, okay, I guess we can talk about, like, the very ending because of how just, like, I don't know.
This movie wanted to be profound so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. Like, that ending is so, like, it's like a non-ending that you would see in like an indie movie.
Yeah.
Except it lacks the, I don't know, the depth or something. Cause like shit just happens and you're like, okay, so they were conning Angus Scrimm, but then Michael Biehn's actual dad, James Coburn, was conning his brother and him. And it's like, okay, I get that. I get that that's what happened, but I couldn't follow the like setup with Angus Scrimm, like how they got him roped into it, like why they was it literally just like he did the pool game with Charlie Sheen and he lost on purpose so that he could meet with Angus Scrimm and then be like, hey, I got more diamonds if you want them.
I literally think that's
so fucking stupid.
It's so stupid. I think that is exactly it. Because he's got like diamonds in the watch and then Charlie Sheen's like, oh, well, I got a guy who can appraise those. So like, you're not trying to hustle me. And then, yeah, it's Angus Scrimm.
Yeah.
I did like the fact that there was like that orb with Angus Scrimm. I wondered, was like a callback to Phantasm.
I wondered if that was, yeah. I had that same thought. Yeah, it could have been.
And like his performance was fine. Like he played the character. I don't know. I feel like whenever I see Angus Scrimm in a movie, I enjoy it just because I liked him in Phantasm. So just seeing him, you know, as like a separate from the movie entirely, just his little microcosm of like a performance of a character, I was like, yeah, this is fun. Angus Scrimm is fun.
I thought he did fine. And I guess some credit, like no performances were like amazing, but I also thought like James Coburn was like standard. Okay, yeah. Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Thank you for
clarifying. That's on a different level.
I guess that goes without saying.
But
I was waiting at the end for them to show up and ask Angus if you wanted to be in the Avengers.
They're going to team up with Angus to hustle someone else.
That's Andy Serkis's character from Black Panther.
Oh, okay.
He's got the same thing. Claw, Ulysses Claw or whatever. I don't know. Do we have anything else about this? It's that's Deadfall.
That's a tight 30.
Okay. I did have something that glad I remembered. Like the question of this movie is, and this is hypothetical, right? Like obviously in this day and age, you can go online and you can watch a clip compilation of Nicolas Cage, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Say that that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And this was the only way that you could experience it. Is this movie worth if you're like, okay, I heard that there's this crazy Nicolas Cage performance, I want to see it. Is it worth watching the movie?
No.
Not the whole movie.
You got to watch the whole movie then. Oh, so no?
No. I wouldn't say so.
Okay.
Maybe. I guess it depends on how big of a Nicolas Cage fan you are. Oh my God. The last 45
that's
or whatever
the thing
minutes.
That sucked.
It was such a slog. And it was like, it was nonsense with him, but then without him, it was just nonsense. It was just nonsense.
Yeah.
It was just hard to get through. It was not, not worth the time, honestly.
I think it is probably like the zaniest one. I would say top five.
It's like it's up there for him.
I would say yes, just for Vivo la fucking France, baby. It's just for that. I think it's worth it because you guys always reference that line.
Yeah,
I feel like you guys. Did we do that in Grandpa Crane at all? Or was that a week with Dad Stinger?
Because
you reference it in something. There is a Grandpa Crane short where you say it.
It's got to be in somewhere, yeah. It's got to be in there somewhere.
I always knew that line. Doesn't Chase say it?
Well, yeah. I mean, he did say it a lot, yeah.
Okay. Because I never knew that it was from this movie.
Or something. I don't know, yeah.
But now that I know that that's where it's from, like this is the genesis of that line.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I would say so. I think so.
I lean towards yes, just because it is like, one. It's like this or Vampire's Kiss, I think is like the, if you're going for Crazy Cage, I think it's like the tops.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's tough. It's like, it's,
I guess I would have to say yes, because I just did that, and that was not the requirement at all. Like, I didn't have those parameters, and I just watched it, so maybe I would.
I'm not it's not like you have to admit, like, the movie is good. It's just like, it, you know, if you had to experience it, I think so. But, yeah. And then I guess with that, unless there's anything else we want to touch on, we can kind of...
Deadfall is over. We're done. Now on to Deadfall 2012.
Well, we got to do our sputter dud.
Yeah.
Oh, dud.
Surprising anyone. Yeah, I mean, even with what I just said, that I think it is worth it, I lean towards that. I mean, this is still got to be a dud.
It was such a bad movie. There were so many fucking crazy, questionable things that I don't think we even touched on.
It was incomprehensible, but it wasn't incomprehensibly funny.
Yeah.
Uncle Lou's, like...
It was just frustrating.
Uncle Lou's, like, wife...
Oh, yeah.
That scene was weird.
It was in the one scene, yeah.
Oh.
You know, I had to do the horsies.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about it.
It's your birthday, Louie.
Yeah,
I just forgot about that.
It seems like they really wanted to have these, like, memorable, zany characters, like the fake beard guy, his weird-ass wife. Like, I feel like they really wanted to have these, like, iconic, memorable characters, but, like, the whole thing was just...
It doesn't read that way, especially not like 30 years later. Yeah. Like, it's just they're just like, it just reads as bad. Like, not really a, you can't like make an icon, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't engineer one.
He got like a how to write a screenplay book. And instead of like substituting all of the examples with his own, he just went with like what the book said to put in the movie.
Like a strip club with one stripper. They can only afford one at a time.
That's right.
With a baby.
Yeah, mama.
Wait, I wasn't even fucking thinking of that when I used that analogy of like a serial killer who like always sucks on a lollipop. They fucking do that in this movie with baby at the strip club.
Baby.
He's like, give me lollipop, sugar. She's like, cherry? The only thing that she has in her hand, like she has one in her hand already. He's like, you know it.
I really fucking hope so.
Yeah, I don't know. I always try to do like potato analogies for this, but I can't even fucking think for this one. It's a big bad potato, but there's a little part of the potato that's called Nicolas Cage. That's good.
Yeah.
It's like one of those potatoes that you leave for too long, like in a covered place, and it starts growing those little green tendrils.
Yep.
And that's how you find it.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage is the little green tendril that leads you to that like rotten potato.
Yeah. There's that little tendril grows like a very, very small potato that's actually delicious, but you're not full. You're not like satisfied from it whatsoever.
You kind of regret spending an hour and a half eating it.
Yeah. And you're like, I think the potato's like at that state where it's just like this just tastes like dirt. It's just dirt.
Yeah, this is a dud for me, I think.
Dud. Yeah, sucks to say that it's a dud because
absolute spud for Nicolas Cage's performance.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sans anything else.
That's why Nicolas Cage is a household name and Christopher Coppola is not.
Yeah, this was the movie that made Nicolas Cage and what ruined Chris Coppola. Yeah. That said, if we were like putting it against like all the other movies that we've all the other duds that we've done so far, I still feel like this is like in the middle somewhere. It's like you know, it's not offensively terrible, like not like Justice League or Suicide Squad or like it's not shit like that.
God. Yeah. I mean if any of the actors in any of those movies had done a performance like Nicolas Cage and actually you know, went all in.
Like Jared Leto.
This is a very
exactly.
You're at like a secluded beachfront hotel with your family when you're like 10 years old. This is the movie that would be playing on the hotel room TV.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
This movie probably lives on like TNT or like the whatever the Turner Classic Movie Channel.
Some this shit. TMC would be fucking nuts. I would love to see Robert Osborne do a TMC intro to Deadfall.
A sinking ship.
TCM, not TMC.
I don't know. Here's an anchor for a sinking ship.
Oh, sure.
This movie.
Yeah, that worked.
Are we back?
Yeah, sure. I'm thinking we're back.
All right.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Okay, so yeah, I think we all got stuff. Do we? I think depending on how much we want to go into it, do we want to start or end with Better Call Saul?
Oh, we can. Oh my god, I feel like ending with it would be better since yeah. it's something that all three of us have,
yeah.
for the most part, seen.
Yeah.
Right.
Not okay. the whole thing, obviously, but.
This isn't like a topic that like I have to talk about, but I guess since we're here, and I know you love In Bruges.
Oh, I know. Yes. I know what you're talking about.
Martin McDonagh has a new movie coming out called The Banshees of Inisherin with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson.
Oh, okay. And I love Brendan Gleeson too.
Yeah, I like both those guys too. Yeah. But just want to shout that out because, yeah, In Bruges is like one of my favorite movies.
See that? That's what you do when you're making hamburger meat. You're blended greasing.
And that's what you do with Nicolas Cage in Deadfall. You blend and grease
him. Blend the grease in.
Blend the grease in, yeah.
No, that sounds awesome, though. I'll have to check out a trailer or something for it.
Yeah, that's one of those. I did watch the trailer, even though like I knew I would watch it anyways, but it doesn't give away like that. Like, I don't really know what
it's about.
All you know, it's like all the setup is that like they've been friends for like 30 years and Brendan Gleeson abruptly ends their friendship for like no reason, and that's about it. But
and it's got the daughter, it's got Mike's daughter-in-law from Better Call Saul.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah,
that's really funny.
Neat. I guess I'll start with I've actually been watching a lot of TV. Better Call Saul, which we'll get into. I started Severance. I will report back when I'm finished. It's fucking sick.
Though. Is it good?
It is that's, really good.
And yeah, that's I've heard it's all really I've heard good. Is that it's very good.
Severance is sick. Fucking God, I'm losing. Oh, I started Russian Doll season two. So I've been catching up with like a lot of shit. But I watched recently because this shit, like. One of my guilty pleasures, bread and butter, is like documentaries or YouTube like video essays on like failed conventions and stuff.
Oh,
like
okay.
give me your Dash Cons, give me your Tanacons, give me your Firefest. Netflix just recently released a documentary on Woodstock 99.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I watched that, and then I went to Letterboxd to rate it, and I saw like one of the reviews was like, "Oh, this is much better." You know, there were a few that mentioned it. It was like, HBO did one a couple years ago that was a lot better, and I was
"Yeah, fuck yeah!"
And I immediately jumped. I watched them like back to back in the same night. Awesome. Yeah, that shit's fucking nuts.
Like, I know some like awful shit happened at it. Like,
yeah,
there were like people like getting raped in the mud pit.
Yeah, I will say like there's shit like that like makes it not as fun as DashCon.
Wasn't it on like stuff, an abandoned like Air Force base?
Yeah,
what the hell?
It was on an abandoned Air Force base.
They didn't even do it where Woodstock was,
and
it was in upstate New York, but yeah, not in the
same. It didn't have like proper facilities like at all.
No,
for people, people were like passing out from dehydration.
yeah there was a couple like I think like heat stroke deaths or something. God. Like that there's like a few deaths, so there's stuff like that makes it like not fun.
Yeah,
but it's Limp still just
Bizkit.
Like
I know Limp Bizkit famously is that the I think it might have been a previous Woodstock, but I know that there's one where Primus played at.
I don't think, because I looked at like who was on the set list, because it was like every big band at the time, but I don't think that they were there.
I think Primus played Woodstock like 94 or 95.
Yeah.
And like they played the song My Name is Mud, and people started throwing mud at the stage.
Nice.
And there's like video of Les Claypool like getting pissed. But his voice is so funny that even when he's pissed, he's like, come on, guys, can't be throwing that mud at us. Like it's like, you sound like you're singing the song.
It sounds like it's part of the song.
Yeah.
Fun fact, Les Claypool and I share a birthday.
Oh shit. Neat. Hell yeah.
But yeah, I would definitely check them out. Like, if you're in, it's fucking wild. Like, I didn't know anything about it personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, just fucking wild. All the shit that like went bad. Like, how every decision they made was like the worst. Like, I guess there was this whole thing with like the closing night. There was like this big rumor. I'm trying to think. I think Red Hot Chili Peppers were like the closing act. But there was like, I guess there had been a rumor circulating around that there was like going to be a surprise secret act after that. And people were like thinking like it was going to be like somewhere like Guns N' Roses or like Prince or something like huge.
Yeah, right.
And it turns out that the only like special thing was that like they handed out and like the people in the documentary are like, they're like, why? Like, there's so many times like, why would they do this? Why would they do this at this point? Because this is the final night again. They hand out candles to everybody to hold up candles during Under the Bridge as like a protest thing, because this was shortly after Columbine. So it was like, they wanted to like do it as like a protest, like an anti-gun protest thing. But when you hand candles to a crowd of like 300,000 people who are pissed off and stressed out and angry and all that shit, they're like literal like they said that like bonfires started like sprouting up like amongst like they could just see from the stage like bonfires. And then like it turned, it's like at, like I can't believe I'd never heard of this before because of how fucking south it goes. Like, there's a part where like this entire line of like tanker trucks explode, like one after another. It's really fucking crazy.
Oh my god. Yeah, I need to watch this pronto, because I remember watching like the two Firefest documentaries and really enjoying them.
Yeah,
because seeing like because like I remember when that shit was being posted on Instagram. I remember the lead up to it.
They're like box lunch that was like a piece of lettuce on like a hamburger. Yeah, no. Just,
that's the DashCon ball pit. But yeah. If you like Firefest, I'd like especially definitely check it out.
Hell yes.
And the guys that run it fucking suck.
Yeah.
One of them is the guy that did the original Woodstock in the 60s too.
Oh, shit.
So it's run by the same dude, but he fucking sucks ass.
Even that one, there were sanitation issues and there was like garbage everywhere.
They had a lot of the same
issues, but it just wasn't nearly as like violent.
Yeah. Right?
It wasn't like on a giant concrete mat that didn't have
because it wasn't
meant for supporting that many people.
Yeah, because like in the 60s, I think what kind of killed the whole hippie Summer of Love shit wasn't Woodstock. It was like
Kent State.
Is that Altamont? Where like the Rolling Stones played and they hired the Hell's Angels to like killed a guy. I think that was kind of the whole like, okay, this era is done
because
it broke out into violence.
Yeah, the vibe that I got is that Woodstock 69 also had its issues, but it hit the mark more or whatever, like despite having issues. But
a festival that doesn't have proper sanitation but has Jimi Hendrix and Santana is probably better than a shitty like a festival that is just like Limp Bizkit.
Yeah,
well, while Connor's gone, I was gonna say,
sure,
because he hasn't gotten to this part in Better Call Saul yet. I have had, because I know you're an ABBA fan. I've had The Winner Takes It All stuck in my head.
Which,
did you finish season 4?
Yeah, I finished season 4. I know the song, but
I think the season finale of 4 is called Winner. And it starts with Chuck and Jimmy doing.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah, that's right.
It's hard to hear that song
without thinking of that now.
Of like their relationship specifically with like the subject matter of the song and like what eventually happens to Chuck.
Yeah.
I'm excited for you to be able to see like the final couple seasons, because
I have 2 episodes left in 5. So I'm getting there.
Okay.
They're in the desert after he goes to pick up the
money. Is that
money
Bad for, Choice Road?
I think so. That's the one that I was on, or that's the next one. Because this one ends and they're still
out
there. So the next one, I'm assuming he gets back home.
The finale is called like Something Unforgivable or something like that. I swear to God, it's like Vince Gilligan, Peter Gould shows are like the only shows where I remember them by
the title.
Yeah. Like, well, I guess Sopranos too, to an extent. Sopranos was another show. I've probably talked about this on the pod before, but like Sopranos is another show that's like really good with effective episode titles that seems inconsequential, and then you figure out the context of why the episode is called that.
Yeah, I like
and you're
that
like,
stuff.
Oh shit! Like it adds, it just adds another layer, and I feel like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul are very good about like their episode titles.
Yeah,
adding,
yeah.
you know.
And I found out last night that we have, or a couple nights ago, that we have AMC Plus. So I don't have to wait to watch the last season.
AMC Plus.
Sucks.
Shit the bed. This series finale of Better Call Saul, we made because like when we started watching Better Call Saul, we initially started it during like during quarantine, and Chloe would just come down to Kalamazoo, and we'd make a huge tray of nachos.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of Nacho the character.
I didn't think
but
of
we
that.
Would just like, we put tortilla chips and like cheese and veg and like bake it in the oven, and we'd have our nachos and we watch a couple episodes of Better Call Saul. It like became a sort of a tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought cinnamon rolls because Gene works at the Cinnabon.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We made our plate of nachos. We made popcorn. We're like ready to watch the finale. And AMC, I think, underestimated how many people were gonna watch the finale. The AMC Plus app just like wouldn't load for 40 minutes.
Oh.
Like, because we used her sister's account, so we were entering username and password, getting the same, like, user error, like, same error code. And, like, she has to work the next morning. So it's, like, it's, like, at 9 o'clock on a Monday night. But, I mean, I was on Twitter, and, like, so many people were just, like, how does this happen? Like, this is the finale of a show that's essentially been part of the same universe for 14 years.
Uh-huh.
How did you not think that, like, your servers were going to be a little stressed?
Yeah.
There's a someone tweeted like me waiting for like AMC Plus to load, and they did the thing with Saul when he's like looking at his phone and he does like the magic fingers at it. it was pretty good, but it was good. Man, we were so frustrated with it though.
That's funny.
AMC absolutely fumbling the bag on.
It was, I was like texting you guys. I was pissed. I was so mad.
That's like, without a question, their biggest like flagship series.
Yeah.
And the finale. It'd be one thing if it were the pilot.
Yeah.
But on the finale.
Yeah.
They shit the bed.
Yeah. Yeah. It was awful. Well, they also like delete, like if you watch AMC Plus right now, you would only be able to watch like the last like 4 or 5 episodes.
Really?
The episodes expire, so you can't watch the beginning of season 6 on AMC Plus.
Fuck.
You're gonna have to like purchase them individually on like Amazon or
I'll watch it in 13 parts on fucking Vimeo or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, shit. Yeah.
Daily Motion.
I thought with AMC Plus I'd be able to watch it, but
nope.
Looks like I'm finding other means, because fuck that.
You got to be a real Jimmy McGill.
Yeah.
You got to find other ways to pull it off.
Have you seen that one lawyer on TikTok?
Is there? Well, I've seen TikToks of lawyers in like, I think Albuquerque, like specifically, but lawyers have definitely taken on like the Saul aesthetic and like.
No, there's a dude that is like, he's got this like fucking hairpiece.
Oh, Jesus.
And then he's got like the pink. Like a pink suit, big like diamond like Super Bowl rings on every finger.
Yeah,
and he's like, he teaches. He's like, if the police bring you a glass of, he's like very, very gestury with his hands.
Yeah,
if the police bring you a glass of water, don't accept it. And
yeah,
it's just very like, he's like evil, evil Saul, but he's like. Not evil. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I feel like Better Call Saul has done for lawyers what Breaking Bad has done for meth dealers. Just like sort of glamorize the whole idea of, because like people are pissed because they just put up like a Walton Jesse statue in Albuquerque.
Ooh,
and I guess people are like, they're mad about that because it's like, well, these guys were
Walt
meth dealers.
Walt is the bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Real quick, because I want to talk about Better Call Saul more, but I had one. I went to go see a movie in the theaters.
Wow.
Wrong. I went to go see an A24 movie in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to get these in while Travis is gone. I went to go see Bodies.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
And I thought it was great.
Yeah. I saw your review because I've been wanting to see that movie for a while.
Because I didn't watch the trailer for it. Apparently the trailer, people are saying the trailer like made this movie look like it was going to suck ass.
That's funny because I was actually, because I think you maybe mentioned that in your Letterboxd review, and that's, I was almost going to go into that when I was talking about The Banshees of Inisherin, because that's a movie where like, I didn't need to see the trailer for that. I'm just like, Martin McDonagh.
You're already a fan.
Those guys, I'm like, I'm going to see it.
Yeah.
It's, but Bodies, this is why I watch trailers still, because if I didn't see the trailer for that movie, you could not convince me to go see it. I remember seeing the premise and like some like stills or something for it before the trailer was released. And I was like, this sounds so fucking dumb. How is this an A24 movie? It looks stupid. It looks like kitschy and popular. And I saw the trailer and I was in. Like, I don't know why people are saying that the trailer's bad.
Really?
I thought the trailer was great. It completely sold me on the movie.
Yeah. It's a tight 90. It's super tight.
Mm-hmm.
Lee Pace is
and
great.
It's got Lee Pace. I love Lee Pace.
His character is fantastic.
He's one of my boyfriends. I love Lee Pace.
people hate Pete Davidson.
Yeah, I do.
But
maybe he gets his face blown off.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, Kanye directed.
No spoilers, but you know, with the Suicide Squad, I think Pete Davidson found his calling.
Okay. Cool.
There is also a cameo at the end of the movie. You would never guess in a million years who shows up in this movie. Apparently, I've not seen anyone else online. Yeah. No one else online has talked about it. Like, the people in our row, with like me, Chloe, and our friends, we all freaked out when we saw this person walk on. Because, like, we were like, holy shit, what is this? What is he doing here?
He's listed, like, pretty far up on Letterboxd, so I already know.
So you already know. Damn. Okay. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about was there's some discourse about this movie that made me so mad. So did you see this, Connor?
Mm-mm.
So apparently there's this like woman who works for the New York Times.
Oh, the problematic authors thing? Or?
No. So she wrote a review of Bodies. She's like a self-identified like lesbian. And
self-diagnosed.
She's a self-diagnosed lesbian. I like that better, actually. But in her review, because it's like, it's got like all the women in it. It's like, it's a very Gen Z movie. They're mm-hmm. wearing like no bras and tank tops. It's very like,
it's the spiritual sequel to Wendy's that the Gen Con audiences were clamoring for.
And so she wrote something about like this movie just basically being like just this movie is just about staring at cleavage or something like that. And one of the actresses, her name is Amandla.
Yeah, Amandla Stenberg.
She replied on Instagram and just told her like, well, my eyes are up here, so if you weren't looking at my tits or something like that. And then this New York Times author, like columnist, makes like a front-facing camera TikTok about people abusing their power dynamics for like, I'm a... And then she like humble brags about like, when I was 24 years old, I was on the front page of the New York Times. And like, it's just... I've never made anything in my life, but I'm a critic and that's basically art. And like trying to like use like power dynamics when it's like her dad works for the New York Times.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like her dad co-founded 538 with Nate Silver.
Oh, wow.
And then like she's trying to act like her status as a New York Times columnist
was like threatened.
Like she's some kind of scrappy underdog.
I'm just a small town reporter.
No, I think what she said that Amandla's comments were like homophobic or something like that.
Awesome.
It's just like people missing the point of that movie so bad.
Yeah.
Because it is satirical. It's definitely like sort of like satirical
but
of like
shit. The bar for satire nowadays is like very...
Yeah.
You have to beat them over the head and be explicit about...
And it's not like satire that's like, oh, this was written by like a 45-year-old white dude.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like there's like a part where they're like, they're trying to find out who the killer is. And then like one of the actresses is like, yeah, well, I have body dysmorphia. They're like, that's ableist. Like they kind of go back and forth, but it's like they use that language from Twitter to be like, it can't be me. Like I have ADHD, like that kind of shit. I don't know. It's very funny.
But at no point do they look directly into the camera lens and say, this is bad. Don't do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my review. Go see that movie and also harass journalists.
Yeah, especially the New York Times people. Yeah,
nepotism babies.
Hang
10.
We want to. Well, I was gonna wait for this to talk about this when Travis was back on the show, but seeing as
that's never gonna happen,
that's never gonna happen again. We've been watching Scrubs again.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yep. I've seen like a lot of it like randomly on TV, but we're starting from the beginning, and we watched like the pilot episode. And I could not believe how tight of a pilot like Scrubs is.
Like a drum.
Just like how perfect the intro episode is, where like you meet all the characters, you know exactly what they want, like their desires, their like sort of insecurities. Mm-hmm. It's just, it was so good. It's just insane. I feel like shows aren't like made like that anymore.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. I can't think of pilot in particular, but there's a lot of episodes like that. That show is really good at like really affecting stories with like the 20-minute times. Like
they multiple get so episodes. Much in there.
I know we're past Better Call Saul now, but I was just kind of thinking that with Better Call Saul.
No, we can get back.
No, we can go back into it.
Okay. Yeah. Just how it draws you in, and like I've heard people say that because like you know where it ends, like regarding Breaking Bad and stuff, that it's just, it doesn't build tension or anything.
I think that is
such bullshit.
It is.
That's the same thing as people missing subtext and stuff like bodies. Like
missing butt sex.
I mean, like even in the Star Wars prequels, which aren't as like profound or deep as Better Call Saul, there's still shit to be gained out of those.
Especially the tension thing. It's like every single scene, it's like when they switch over, because it's like at least where I'm at right now, it's switching between like Mike and Saul, and then some stuff with like Charles and Kim.
Sure.
Every scene, it's like when it ends, I'm like, no, wait, keep going with that. Like and then it builds up in the next one, and then it switches back, and it's just, it's so good. It's such a good show.
Yeah.
I need to catch up. I'm bad at watching TV. I've tried to watch this one like.
Yeah.
I watched season one, I watched the first half of season one probably 5 times before I actually watched it all the way through. Just because I'll drop off and then.
Yeah.
But I watched this whole season within like a couple days.
Okay. Nice. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Nice. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I found a YouTube channel that's like these, I think they're like either Russian or you're Ukrainian or I don't know. Eurythrin. Urethrin. But they're like a reacts YouTube channel.
Okay.
But there's been so much like Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul shit that's been like thrust upon my timeline lately, because it's very relevant right now. We'll see if the mic picked that up.
These metal chairs. I didn't think it was gonna sound like that.
Like an elephant crashing through the underbrush.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, it's a very relevant show right now.
Right.
And like I found their channel. And I think Breaking Bad is like my favorite show to watch other people react to.
Yeah.
They're watching Better Call Saul as well. But like I've just been like kind of scrubbing through watching like key episodes of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, episodes and moments.
And just like it reminded me of how good at storytelling that they are with like I feel like there's no other show that is so good at like using like a black screen, and then like like I feel like executive producer Vince Gilligan a character almost. Like I was watching it was like a episode of Breaking Bad right after Jesse shoots Gale, and it's kind of when Hank starts figuring out that like Pollos Hermanos is, you know, I think it was Box Cutter. And at the end of the episode,
Jesus Christ,
Walt and Jesse are
before that, or no, it's like two, it's half, never mind. We're just
yeah
splitting hairs. Yeah.
But yeah. there's, I was just half like, measures. There's a moment where it's like Walt. They're both wearing like these Kenny Rogers shirts.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because like yeah, they got they just had to get different shirts to wear because like yeah. they yeah. just witnessed this shit. But it's like that's even right. something as simple as that, like the song starts playing and it cuts to Gail's apartment and they're like taking police photos, and then the camera just slowly moves over and you see the folder that says lab notes.
Yeah, yeah.
Just something as simple as that, and
yeah,
then it
right.
cuts to black. Executive yeah. producer Vince Gilligan. Yeah. They're so good at like leaving it on such a good note to lead into the next episode. And, like Better Call Saul is like
perfect. Well, and that. Especially. I just, like I said, literally today, I just finished season two. And you're.
How does that one end?
He comes home. So Jimmy gets yeah. a call from Hamlin.
Yeah.
Howard Hamlin. And he's like, why did you do this? And you don't really know what's happening. And then he shows up at Charles's house, and Charles is like freaking out. He's putting the emergency like foil blankets everywhere.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't do this anymore. I made a mistake. I shouldn't be a lawyer anymore. I'm retiring. All this stuff. And Charles is like, this whole time he's playing him like a fiddle. And just to get, because I think deep down, and that's the whole point
recorder.
Of this.
It's the tape recorder.
Yeah, it's the tape recorder.
Doesn't he like fish it out because it's electronic?
He flips a pillow off of it. Yeah. Or flips one of the blankets yep. off of it and then hits the stop with the tongs.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, you just admitted to a felony, right? And he's like, yeah, but I think you should still be a lawyer.
But he's like, no one's going to believe you. Or
it's my word against yours. And then, yeah, it's.
and the thing is, I'll say like leading into season three, like it's so nice that like the show, so many shows will do that with like season ending cliffhangers that'll just kind of be wrapped up in the season premiere.
Yeah, right.
Right. And I mean, this isn't necessarily like a bad thing, but I guess that is kind of what happens in Box Cutter. Like there's a big like cliffhanger, like end of season three. And then it's just like, okay, Gus killed that other guy. And now they're on thin ice, but okay, now that cliffhanger's wrapped up. Better Call Saul like doesn't do that. Like right. that. Is
it's the
effects of the season two finale. That's like
that gun stays
that's like
loaded.
All of season three.
Yeah.
is on that. Yeah. A good chunk of it. You know, it's not like the whole thing, but
you have,
and it's so good. It's so good that like
in season three, you have one of like the best monologues coming up, I think, of Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul.
Sidebar. Yeah, I think I know the one that we're talking about.
The episode is called Chicanery.
Okay, I'll let you know.
But there, I mean, it's become a meme now, I've noticed. Like, people post, like, the full script of this character's, like, monologue. But, yeah, that's...
I think I'm thinking of the one you're thinking. Yeah, maybe well, just message me or just...
Yeah. But, no, I'm so excited that... You were watching this show.
Yeah, well,
and now that I know like all of it in whole, I mean, we watched the first episode like the night of the series finale, just to like, it's so funny that like this show, it starts out very vibrant and colorful.
Yeah, right.
And mm-hmm. like the last couple seasons, just it gets darker and darker, and there's a really cool again the effective use of titles. As you watch the show, I don't know if you've noticed that you're only on season two, each title sequence becomes more and more like desaturated as
like, I have kind of noticed some color stuff
to the point. I think like the closer he becomes to like Saul proper,
yeah.
and like the Breaking Bad timeline, every intro sequence per season has just become slowly and slowly more desaturated until it's just like black and white and like hardly there.
Right.
It's cool. Everything about it is just, it's so perfectly like written and executed.
Yeah. It's an awesome show.
And I don't want to say it, but there is a moment that, cause I just checked the last episode I watched is season 5, episode 8, Bagman is the name
okay,
of the episode
okay,
that I watched.
Okay.
There's a couple before that, where there's like a thing that happens and me and Clea were both, we both like looked at each other and we were smiling. Cause it's like a really like Like, and then I was like, no, I was like, I don't know why I'm smiling. It's not going to end well. Like,
is it like with like Jimmy and Kim or just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does a good job of like, cause there are certain characters that aren't in Breaking Bad and people like speculate, oh, why isn't so-and-so in Breaking Bad? Like what happens? And I think people online tend to be like, oh, they must be dead. And it's like, these writers are so much better than just like killing everyone.
Yeah,
off.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I, fan theories, I think I've outgrown them.
Like, oh, yeah.
A lot of times are just the dumbest shit you've ever heard.
It's like, aren't you glad these people aren't writers?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like, well, it's funny because, I mean, same with like Breaking Bad, they were going to kill off Jesse Pinkman. Mm-hmm. In like the first season.
Yeah, like very yeah. early.
I think in Better Call Saul, like characters like Kim weren't initially going to be like major players.
Oh, cool.
I think that's same cool. with like Howard. I don't know. I don't think they had these big sort of arcs planned for them, but I think as the actors and actresses portrayed these characters, their performances were Kim, so good.
Kim's I'm so bad with actress names.
Ray Seahorn.
Is awesome. Like, oh. I think she's very good.
Yeah, Kim, she is really good.
People, I think people at this point like Kim more than Jimmy at the end of the show.
Yeah, I could
well,
see
Well, I'm
that,
sure by the end of it, yeah. I mean, Jimmy, he's not a bad guy in the terms of like compared to Walt, but like he's still not like, I don't know.
He's morally flexible.
Yeah, like but I said, we.
Yeah, like he's still not a good guy.
Mm-hmm. He's sympathetic.
He's sympathetic, but he's still like kind of sleazy and probably shouldn't be a lawyer.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because I feel like when you're watching the show, you're like, when does he become Saul? Like, when is this going to happen? And then
when does he call Saul?
And then, and then the episode hits when he becomes Saul and you're like, can I have Jimmy back, please?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, it's like,
are you saying, is that like in the last season? Like it hasn't, cause I guess I've kind of felt like with me, I've just kind of seen a slow transition.
It's a very, series. It's a very slow transition,
but there's a moment,
but there's
where
definitely
like,
a moment where, but well, they start getting into like Breaking Bad territory.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah. I'm trying to be as vague as possible it. But there is definitely a moment. And
okay.
It's like if you've been waiting for him to turn into Saul and then everyone is just like, give me Jimmy. like his Elder Law ads.
Yeah.
yeah.
So.
Yeah. I I thought it was going to be easier to finish it than I found out.
Now that you know how terrible AMC Plus is.
But I still am going to try to finish it because I want to, because it's very good.
Yeah.
I still think it's, like you were saying about like, oh, every time a storyline ends, I want it to like keep going. That's why to me, it's superior to Breaking Bad. It's because Breaking Bad, it was not that. It was every time Jesse and Walter's story ended, I was like, no, get back to that. But then anytime it went to, you know, Marie shoplifting or Skylar smoking, it's like, okay, let's get back to the other stuff. Okay. I don't give a fuck about this.
Well, and the secondary, the B plot on this one is probably like the best character in the show. So
are you talking about Mike?
Mike, yeah. Or my favorite anyway.
Yeah.
I didn't really like Mike. Was such a whatever character to me in Breaking Bad.
Even in Breaking Bad, I liked him. Like he was like my favorite.
I know a lot of people did like him in Breaking Bad. Yeah. I never connected with him until Better Call Saul. But now I fucking love him. He's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same with Gus.
Oh, wait, he's in this?
you kind of see how that relationship is formed between Mike and Gus.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, again, it's like no heavy spoilers because like we all know
Breaking Bad. We know where it ends up.
But it's to the point where like it recontextualizes things so much that you watch Breaking Bad and you see Saul Goodman and you're like, you're Jimmy McGill.
I know. I'm thinking of like,
I know who you are.
Right.
And this is like, he's like, he becomes the most tragic character in Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Well, and that's how I feel.
I don't want it to be like endless spinoffs, but I would love to see where, like Mike's actual like backstory, you know?
Yeah.
I would just love to see more of that.
As a beat cop.
I like,
as
like Mike.
As like a beat cop into.
I like Mike.
When he was in Vietnam or whatever, like yeah, all that yeah. stuff. Just I just like him.
Like the Halo novels, like get some yeah. of that Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Ehrmantraut cinematic universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another thing is like, I wonder if Vince Gilligan just has it down, like just knows all of his stuff so well that he can write these, or if he has someone that like advises, like, okay, these are your beats and this is what you like.
It is interesting because like for this last season, I've been listening to like the Better Call Saul Insider podcast. Like it would come out the day after and it would be hosted by like people who work on the right. show, and they would have like
Peter Talking Saul.
Yeah, but it's not the, you know, Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
They would have like Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, and like they would have like writers
right.
and like directors on the show.
And Elliot Gould.
And Elliot Gould. And you
and
know,
Vince Gilligan.
You'd be surprised how much they don't actually have planned out, and how much they I don't know. I was kind of talking about this with like Barry too, but I feel like a lot of
That was the other show that I finished.
Oh, you did finish?
I was talking about like all the shows that
I haven't seen
the
most recent season on that
one. It's still fine, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. It definitely did get more darker than the previous two seasons.
But I'm not a fan of the ending, though. I know it's not the end of the show, but not a fan.
Of where, okay.
Just that the end. I don't like where it ended up.
Gotcha. Is it the end or no?
No, I'm
like the season finale.
If that's the series finale, I didn't think so. There were too many threads that were like left hanging. But if that was a series finale, that'd be like fucking terrible.
No, because like what I was saying about like the Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul writers, it's like they write characters into corners all the time, mm-hmm. and I feel like they're very good at like letting what is like logical and organic. You watch it and you're like, oh, duh. Like a lot of, because people come up with these fan theories about like, what if Howard is actually doing this during the Breaking Bad timeline? Or what if Jimmy and Kim are actually doing this during the Breaking Bad timeline? And we just, and it's like,
what's Eddie up to? That's all I need to know.
A lot of the times what happens
from Deadfall
is it's, they let like realism. Like talking about
they let it breathe and play out on its own.
What happens is like what would happen in real life, but the way that they do it, it's like I was talking about with like Gale, like they shoot Gale, and it's like it's like a big shock that you see all the Los Pollos Hermanos stuff in his apartment, and that's what eventually puts Hank onto Gus. But it's like this big shocking reveal, but it's like, oh yeah, but that would make sense.
Right.
It would be in his apartment.
Like it seems like such a small.
Yeah,
like detail that contextually makes sense, but then if you actually think about it, it's like, okay, yeah, that's how it would be.
Yeah, they take something that's like very normal and logical in the story and make you feel like, holy shit, what a reveal.
Right
yeah,
and I think
for sure
I think Barry is like decent at that, but but if you're already not a fan, or
I think that's not the thing. It's not that I'm not a fan. Like, it's a very watchable show. I watched the third season in like almost like one sitting.
Oh,
it's,
shit.
It's
okay.
A very, like,
I mean, it's like 30 minute long episodes, so you can just kind
of. It's a very, like, it's one of those that I can watch, and like it's not like boring.
Yeah.
It's just, it's at no point have I felt like whenever I hear people raving about it, I've never like really read a review, I'll say. And I'm like, I know it's like, it's mixing. Like, it's comedy, it's supposed to be funny. And there were a few moments in the third season that were, like, pretty funny. But nothing like that. I'm like, wow, I'm watching this for the comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, there's, like, dramatic moments, and those just don't hit with me. So when I hear people, like, rave about the show, I'm like, okay, is it the comedy or is it the drama? Like, what do people love about this show so much? And like you say that, like, it does really write them into corners and then like finds these weird ways to like get them out of it. But I kind of think that Barry's like the antithesis of Better Call Saul in that situation, which I think is okay for something like Barry. But I think all the ways that it gets him out of these scenarios are like so ridiculous and so unbelievable.
It's
or
more
just out of left field.
It's more earned in like Better Call Saul.
Well, and I feel like Barry...
And that's not a knock against Barry.
I'm
okay with that in Barry.
I feel like Barry is like more... I guess bombastic. It's more like
what do you guys like? Like, what is the thing that keeps you like? Is it more of a comedy or is it more of like the drama stuff? Like, what is it that like makes it like great to you? I'm genuinely asking. I'm not trying to sound like sardonic or anything. I'm being genuine.
I don't know. That's hard to say.
Bill Hader, he's probably a big reason.
Yeah,
I love Bill Hader,
and yeah. Bill Hader is like a mate, like really, really good in this. It's hard to say. Well, and it's been a while since I've actually watched it. Like, I haven't watched the most recent season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think it was like right after the second season came out that I watched that one. Okay. So,
I think for me, it's like it's kind of like with Breaking Bad. With you, like you like Walt and Jesse.
Uh-huh.
And I think for me, it's like, I like Barry and Fuchs, but also...
I fucking hate Fuchs. That's some... He is like one of the most loathsome characters and like not in like a good way. I hate him so much.
Chris Steven Root.
Steven
okay,
Root's character.
His handler. I couldn't remember if Fuchs was Steven Root or Henry Winkler. What's Henry Winkler's character's name?
Gene Cousineau.
That's right.
He says Cousineau.
Yeah, which
that's right.
It is. I like his character because
Gene Parmesan.
He kind of does play up the sort of like Barry Zucker corn.
Yeah,
like
right.
The sort of like of, yeah. He's a delusional actor, like delusions of grandeur. But I feel like his character gets a little bit more fleshed out, and I think Henry Winkler shows and more like dynamic range than he does.
There's solid acting, most of the people.
He gives a pretty good performance. Like, you wouldn't really
it's a well-constructed show.
Expect that from him, but
there's a chase scene in the third season that I actually really liked. The highway.
Uh-huh.
That was really cool. I really liked that.
I think a lot of the action is pretty well crafted too, from what I remember from the first couple seasons.
Yeah, there's some realism in it that is like, oh, that would happen if...
No, go ahead. Finish what you're saying.
Like, there's a certain he gets a knife somewhere and it
in the third season.
Yeah, it might be the finale.
I don't.
Just a character gets stabbed gets through knifed. The back of the neck, but like the blade pokes his eye through the
end. That was so fucked up.
I was like, oh.
Jesus Christ.
I was like, but that would happen in real life.
That was,
and
that
I was like, you have good. To think where the blade actually goes. Yeah.
That was good.
And I was like, oh, I don't like that. I don't, ew. Because he's like, what did you do to my eye? What's happening with my, and it's like,
yeah.
The knife poked through the back of his eye.
That's right.
I got so squeamish during that.
Hit his nerve or up
there. Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah. That's so realistic, though. Like, that's probably what would happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. It is rough.
Yeah, near the end of that season was getting, like, better. But it was, like, when I finished watching it, I was like, yeah, there's really good parts. It's just, like, as a whole, it hasn't like fully like won me over like that.
Yeah.
I love Noho Hank too. I think he's consistently a really funny character.
And
that's
another one that was also supposed to be killed off.
Oh, really?
Like early on. I think he was supposed to be whatever the like boss dude in the first season.
The yellow
Puzzar.
Yeah, he was
from True Detective.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like I only see him as
He was in Chernobyl too, wasn't he?
No, I don't think so.
No, Hank or the other guy?
No, the other guy.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
He is one of those guys who's in. He's you see him pop up in HBO stuff. Him and
he would be a good guy from Crime Wave.
He
would be
for
a good,
sure
in the remake of Crime Wave. He'd be a good that guy. I was gonna say something, and it's. Oh, friend, sort of friend
is
of
a fucking Bored Ape as their IMDb picture.
Yeah, there is. Who is that? Oh man,
damn.
Sort of friend of the pod, someone we've met in real life, is in it.
In Barry,
yeah. Jesse Pinkman's dad.
Oh yeah,
Michael
that's
Balshedder.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, that whole storyline's pretty
Watchmen
bummer.
The guy
that in Watchmen.
We,
that's what I was
we were talking to at the Frankfurt Film Festival a year ago, and we mentioned that we do a podcast, and he immediately like reeled a little bit. I watched a part of him die.
Yeah,
it's like, please don't invite me on your podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Well, do we want to announce do we want to say special guest and then draw the cup, or do you want to just draw the cup and then we'll make a separate announcement for the guest?
Well, I thought we wanted to wait.
That's true, cuz we're waiting for
and I was going to, if they are on, then give them the opportunity to suggest one.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't if they say they don't want to, then I can just pull one for two. But I would say let's
draw one.
On yeah,
we'll draw. Okay, one. Okay. Well, there's your teaser. Special guest,
maybe
in the future. Hopefully. He has to answer my email. But it's pretty solid, I think.
Okay, I gotta do a random number generator.
Nice. This is gonna be a fun one to edit.
51. Yeah. Oh man. Oh baby, it's time.
Oh, is it?
It's fucking time, baby.
What do we got? What do we got?
Let me look up the shit. So I got the. Yeah. So I got the details.
Give me all the credits.
From 1977, directed by Nobuhiko Obayashi. We're watching House of.
Oh, oh
yes, 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 yes.
Fuck. You might have to come over to my house.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
I've been meaning to watch that.
Oh,
I'm down to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got. Oh wait, do you have a way to watch it? Because I have it on Blu-ray. It'd be on HBO. Yeah. I guess if you can get HBO, then yeah.
Yeah.
I have HBO. So.
Oh, that's awesome. We watched it last fall, I think, or last early spring. I don't know. We did watch it, and
we should at least watch it together.
I'm glad. Yeah. I was worried we'd be waiting a long time to watch that one.
Sick. I think Travis watched it first and was like wanting to talk about it, but then we're like, we might get it in the cup.
Yeah.
Maybe this will get him to come back.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll see.
Hell yeah. Right. That's awesome though. I'm excited for that.
Hell yeah. Okay. All right. If you don't want to be spoiled for House, watch it before next week, as we said it's on HBO at least. Probably on Criterion Channel, but that's a lot less popular of a streaming service. These episodes come out every Wednesday at 7 p.m. EST on Twitch and YouTube in video form, and also in audio form on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. We also have social pages on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. That's it, I think.
Seem to be on LinkedIn.
tell us busting it down.
And with all that said,
oh man, I didn't even think about this.
Man, yeah, there's a lot of options to go with here. I'll go. What am I, man? A fucking retard? I'm a fucking retard, man. TJ, aka J Spot Jack Cheese, and with me as always,
I didn't reference this at the very beginning. The guy that they were gonna mark, he was like slurring his words also.
I feel like a fucking piece of bacon, man.
Okay. Nick, aka Dr. Funk on Twitch, and with me as always.
I'm Connor, aka Sam fucking Peckinpah.
That was the other one I was thinking of doing.
Bingo Bronson 420 on tweeter.com.
Nice.
Thank you. And have a nice night.
What the fuck was up with the Sam Peckinpah shit? Nicolas Cage is in the bar and he goes, "Well, here's the Sam fucking Peckinpah." And then 5 minutes later, the guy in the alley's like, "Who sent you? Sam fucking Peckinpah." And he's like, "Yeah!" Yeah. Eats a face like, why?